had some technical difficulties, but Broncos GM George Payton announced on December 27th that Wilson was being benched for the final two games of the season. The move is the first step in what's expected to result in the 9-time Pro Bowler being released by the Broncos during the offseason. If Denver decides to move on from Wilson, it will come at a significant cost to the team. As James Palmer tweeted, quote, "If this offseason the Broncos part ways with Russell Wilson, a post-June 1st release would divide the $85 million in dead money over two seasons, $35.4 million in 2024 and $49.6 million in 2025. Even though Payton has the title of general manager, there's little doubt that Sean Payton, is pulling the strings with the roster decisions. In April, Woody Page of the Denver Gazette reported that George Payton, quote, won't make a pick or a trade without Sean Payton's approval. Adam Schefter noted that both men, quote, have worked well together this season, but the Broncos are Payton's organization, that's Sean Payton, and he gets to shape it how he wants it. There was little doubt about Sean Payton would have significant influence over everything within the organization when the Broncos traded a 2023 first-round pick and a 2024 second-round pick to the New Orleans Saints to acquire his rights. Sean Payton subsequently signed a deal with the Broncos reported to be worth around $18 million per season over 5 years. When a team invests that much draft capital and money into a coach, it's safe to assume that they're going to have a lot of power that extends beyond just coaching. George Payton was hired as Denver's GM in January 2021. He spent the previous 14 seasons working in the Minnesota Vikings front office. The Broncos can finish their first winning season with a win over the Raiders. Let's see. We got a lot to talk about. The NFL playoffs. Playoff picture is set. Bear with me. Some technical difficulties here. Let's talk about more football, baby. It appears the Carolina Panthers owner David Tepper is locked in on who he wants his team's next head coach to be. The Athletic reported Saturday that Tepper wants to hire Detroit Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson for the vacancy and that Johnson is, quote, open to the job. Quote, owner David Tepper is going to try again for Ben Johnson, according to a leaked source. The play caller is open to the job and will also be meeting with other teams that are expected to show interest, the source said. There's a sense around the league that general manager Scott Fitterer may help with some of the transition, but still may not be safe in his job. Carolina could be starting anew. The Panthers hired Frank Reich as its head coach ahead of this season, but he was fired in November after a 1-10 start to the season. Carolina has since gone 1-4 and head into Week 18 with a 2-14 record that they clinched for the worst in the NFL. The disastrous season is heightened by the fact that the Panthers do not hold their own first-round pick. That pick was dealt to the Chicago Bears last season as part of a package that netted them the number one overall pick in 2023. Quarterback Bryce Young was ultimately the Panthers' selection, and he has experienced some growing pains this year. He's thrown for 2,783 yards with 11 touchdowns and 10 interceptions as a rookie and has been sacked 59 times. That's not really his fault, though. With number two pick C.J. Stroud lighting it up with the Houston Texans, it hasn't exactly been an easy season in Carolina. Still, Bryce Young is an intriguing piece to work with, and Johnson could be the best person to unlock his potential. He's in his second season as the Lions offensive coordinator, and he's been instrumental in a turnaround that had netted Detroit their first ever NFC North Division title. The Lions rank number three in the NFL in total offense, and quarterback Jared Goff is also number three in passing yards. Johnson will be among the most sought-after coaches in the next cycle and should have some intriguing offers. We will see, though, if he will be the next head coach of the Carolina Panthers or not. Let's transition back to the NHL, or back to hockey, I should say. The Chicago Blackhawks placed rookie phenom center Connor Bedard on injured reserve after suffering a fractured jaw against the New Jersey Devils on Friday as a result of a hit midway through the first period. Devils defenseman Brendan Smith appeared to hit Bedard in the face while the Blackhawks were in their offensive zone. Bedard skated off the ice and into the locker room after a whistle, while the Blackhawks' Philip Kurashev rushed to his teammate's defense by going after Smith. Nick Foligno soon skated over to Smith and was eventually given two roughing penalties for his actions. Smith, who was not penalized for the Bedard hit, got his own roughing penalty for his interaction with Foligno. The Blackhawks continued to go after Smith in the second period, with Nick Foligno fighting him. A few seconds earlier, Devils right wing Nathan Bastian got hit with a boarding call on Chicago's Ryan Donato. Alex Vlasic then rushed to Donato's defense and a skirmish ensued. The 18-year-old Bedard, who was selected first overall in the most recent NHL draft, has amassed 15 goals and 18 assists this year. He is obviously the cornerstone of the Blackhawks franchise, so it's no surprise that they would rush to his defense. Let's talk about Draymond Green. Golden State Warriors veteran Draymond Green has been reinstated by the NBA after serving a 12-game suspension following an incident involving Phoenix Suns veteran Yusuf Nurkic on December the 12th, the league announced on Saturday. Draymond is eligible to return to the lineup on Sunday against the Raptors. However, Woj of ESPN reported Saturday that he is expected to need approximately a week to ramp up for a return to the court. Green's return had been expected for some time, as Woj noted on Thursday that he had returned to the team's facility to begin ramping up to resume play. He was ejected from the December 12th game against the Suns in the third quarter after being called for a flagrant 2 foul after he hit Nurkic in the face. Just a few minutes into the third quarter, Draymond and Nurkic were battling for positioning when the Warriors veteran swung around and hit the Suns' big man in the head. Nurkic hit the floor in pain and officials reviewed the play before tossing Draymond out of the game. The NBA announced an indefinite suspension for Draymond the next day, and Woj reported that the veteran was expected to receive counseling as part of the conditions for him to return to the court. Chris Haynes of Bleacher Report also reported that Green would be allowed to practice with the team during his suspension. Draymond apologized for the incident after the game, saying he didn't try to hit Nurkic, adding that he, quote, sells calls with his arms. I don't follow sell a call. I'm not a flopper, so I was selling the call because he was grabbing me and pulling my hip back, so I swung away, and unfortunately, I hit him. Draymond was suspended for the fifth time in his career earlier this season for putting Minnesota Timberwolves center Rudy Gobert into a headlock during an in-season tournament matchup. The 33-year-old was given a five-game suspension as the NBA cited past infractions in relation to the punishment. Draymond's antics have certainly put a stain on what has been a Hall of Fame-worthy career. Otherwise, he's a four-time NBA champion, four-time All-Star, and the 2016-17 Defensive Player of the Year, among other accolades. He went to Michigan State. He's averaging 9.7 points, 5.5 rebounds, and 6 assists in 15 games this season while shooting 49% from the floor and 43% from three. So pretty solid, but Draymond's return will be absolutely massive for the Warriors. Let's switch gears back to the NFL. Pittsburgh Steelers star TJ Watt's knee injury has been diagnosed as a grade 2 MCL sprain, according to his brother JJ. With the Steelers officially in the playoffs and star TJ Watt dealing with a grade 2 MCL sprain, sources say the absolute best case scenario for his injury is to play in 2 weeks with a brace. So to get Watt back on the field, Pittsburgh likely needs to win a few. That's obviously a massive loss for the Steelers. Ian Rapoport of NFL Network previously reported the injury was feared to be a torn MCL. While the news is undoubtedly good for the Steelers star, it does mean he's likely to miss Pittsburgh's playoff opener and possibly their divisional round matchup should they advance. Watt suffered the injury late in the third quarter after a collision with teammate Montrevious Adams heading to the medical tent before entering Pittsburgh's locker room. He did not return to the game. Watt's brother and former three-time Defensive Player of the Year JJ Watt called the injury, quote, devastating in a post on X, formerly known as Twitter. He said, no worse feeling, devastating. That's absolutely true. Prior to his exit, the six-time Pro Bowler pass rusher recorded a team-high 8 tackles as well as two sacks. This brought his season total up to 19, which is the highest mark in the NFL. I mean, crazy. So that is a huge, huge loss for the Steelers. Let's transition to tennis now, shall we? Rafael Nadal withdrew from the 2024 Australian Open on Sunday after an MRI revealed he is dealing with a micro tear in his surgically repaired left hip, saying, quote, hi all, during my last match in Brisbane, I had a small problem on a muscle that, as you know, made me worried. Once I got to Melbourne, I have had the chance to make an MRI, and I have micro tear on a muscle, not in the same part where I had the injury, and that's good news. Nadal needed a medical timeout in the third set of his quarterfinals match against Jordan Thompson at last week's Brisbane International. Thompson would go on to upset the former world number one, casting doubt on Nadal's status for the year's first major. Nadal's appearance in Brisbane was his first since the 2023 Australian Open, as he sat out nearly a full calendar year while dealing with a hip flexor injury. The absence allowed Novak Djokovic to pass Nadal on the all-time Grand Slams list, with Nadal now sitting two behind his fellow all-time greats record of 24. Nadal has won only two of his 22 majors at the Australian Open, but he was triumphant in Melbourne 2 years ago. He would have faced a massive uphill battle to capture a third championship down under, given his current world ranking of number 672. Nadal will likely spend the next few weeks getting his body right and hoping to ramp up his activity before the start of the clay court season. The 37-year-old has won a record 14 French Open championships, and clay has definitely been his best surface, obviously, and perhaps more forgiving to his body over the years. If Nadal is going to add to another Grand Slam to his mantle, his best odds will come in Paris, France. With Nadal out and Roger Federer and Serena Williams retired, Djokovic will be by far the biggest individual draw heading into the Australian Open for either the men's or women's side. Unfortunately for Nadal, but hopefully he, returns soon. With that, let's switch gears back to the NFL. The Washington Commanders are reportedly expected to fire head coach Ron Rivera on Monday. NFL Network reported the Commanders are expected to move on after four seasons as new majority owner Josh Harris looks to make his stamp on the franchise. Rivera is 26-39-1 overall as the Commanders head coach coming into the Sunday season finale. While Harris is expected to make a splash in revamping Washington's leadership as the franchise continues to erase the culture set by former owner Daniel Snyder, the Commanders are not expected to pursue New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. The Patriots and Belichick are widely expected to part ways after more than two decades together in the coming days. The Commanders won the NFC East in Rivera's first season with a 7-9 record and have not posted a winning record during his tenure. The franchise has not been above 500 since 2006 and has not won 10 games since 2012. Rivera, who came to the Washington in 2020 after being fired by the Carolina Panthers after 9 seasons, has a record of 102, 102, and 2 as a head coach. I mean, just mid, the definition of mid record-wise. With the Cowboys installed as massive favorites on were on Sunday, it's looking like he will be fired. Harris led a group of investors who purchased the Commanders for $6.05 billion earlier this year. The new ownership group is yet to make any noticeable overhauls aside from adding stability, but that will almost certainly change this offseason. Rivera and GM Martin Mayhew will be on the outs, and John Keim of ESPN reported Harris wants to, quote, outside the box in building his organization. That could mean hiring a data-driven decision-maker, as Harris did in Daryl Morey with the Philadelphia 76ers, or finding another way to push the envelope. Regardless, it's likely that Harris will take a top-down approach and make some big, big changes. We got more football to talk about. I mean, it's playoff season. The reigning NFC champion Philadelphia Eagles are limping to the finish line of the 2023 season with 4 losses in their last 5 games after starting off so good. But wide receiver A.J. Brown reportedly did what he could to turn around the vibes. According to Jay Glazer of Fox Sports, Brown was, quote, the voice of reason this week and organized a players-only meeting following the most recent loss to the Arizona Cardinals. Glazer noted that Brown also apologized to his teammates because they had to, quote, answer for me and my emotions during the recent struggles. The wide receiver was seen appearing to yell at Jalen Hurts during a game against the Kansas City Chiefs earlier this season and is known for sometimes being emotional on the sidelines. Yet he has taken steps to bring the team closer together. Eagles right tackle Jordan Malaita revealed during an appearance on sports radio 94 Whip that Brown even organized a team outing to an escape room, quote, just to build camaraderie. There was a time when it seemed like the Eagles may be well on their way to a second consecutive Super Bowl appearance when they started 10-1 with victories over the Chiefs, Cowboys, Bills, and Dolphins. However, a blowout loss to the 49ers on December 3rd changed everything. That started something of a nosedive that included losses to the Arizona Cardinals, Seattle Seahawks, and Dallas Cowboys in a rivalry game rematch. The defense was missing in action during a 35-31 loss to Arizona, while the offense failed to reach the 20-point mark against the 49ers, Cowboys, and Seahawks. So definitely scary times, and I'm sure nervous times if you're an Eagles fan. Philadelphia, I don't know. We'll see how they do in the playoffs, but yeah. More football, more NFC East teams. Daniel Jones appeared in only 6 games this season before a torn ACL ended his campaign, leading to players like Tommy DeVito and Tyrod Taylor getting a look at quarterback. But the expectation is that Jones will be the New York Giants starter open the 2024 season, according to NFL Network. Quote, I'm told he's attacked his rehab to the point that he's been sitting on the field on his own time in a chair throwing footballs and baseballs so that he can throw without being on a surgically repaired knee. That's definitely dedication right there. The 26-year-old struggled when healthy this season, throwing for only 909 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions while taking 30 sacks, a whopping 5 per game, and completing 67.5% of his passes. The Giants were 1-5 in his starts. It was a major regression after Jones had a solid season in 2022, at least by his own standards, after he was generally pretty poor between the 2020-21 seasons, throwing for a career best 3,205 yards and 5 interceptions to go along with 15 touchdowns and a 67.2 completion percentage. Jones was 9-6-1 as a starter, led the team to a playoff berth, and was one of the most intriguing free agents heading into the offseason as the Giants previously declined his fifth-year option. But signing him to a 4-year deal worth $160 million felt like a dramatic overpay, and his struggles in 2023 seemed to justify those concerns. Jones is now only 23-37-1 as the team's starting quarterback, including the playoffs, and the Giants are committed to him for another 3 seasons. That's not that long, so we'll see. It will be interesting to see how the team handles the draft, however, where it likely will have a top-5 pick and could be in a position to select a quarterback like Caleb Williams or Drake May, potentially, if they trade up the board. Granted, the team could also use the selection to add a much-needed playmaker at wide receiver or address other needs as well. Cutting or trading Jones isn't much of an option, as the team would be saddled with $63.3 million in dead cap, and it's hard to imagine many teams inquiring about trading for him, especially given the contract that he has. So, yeah, Daniel Jones, you know, let's talk about some more football. Los Angeles Rams wide receiver Puka Nacua continued his sensational rookie season on Sunday by breaking a 63-year-old record. Nacua secured a catch in the third quarter of Sunday's game against the San Francisco 49ers to break the rookie receiving yards record with 1,486 yards this season. The previous record was held by Bill Grohman, who recorded 1,473 in 1960. On the same drive, Nacua also broke the rookie receptions record with 105, snapping Jalen Waddle's 2021 record. Nacua was a fifth-round draft pick out of BYU in the 2023 NFL Draft, and he's quickly proved his worth. Along with 1,486 receiving yards, he's also totaled 5 touchdowns this season.
His record-setting season has made him one of the top candidates for Rookie of the Year, along with Houston Texans quarterback C.J. Stroud. Nacua also secured a Pro Bowl bid this season, making him one of just three rookies to play in the game. Puka Nacua has been one of the best rookie receivers this season, and the race is not very close. The closest rookie to Nacua is in receiving yards is Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice, who has 938 receiving yards on the year. Puka Nacua has been absolutely huge for the Rams. And, yeah, he's been absolutely fucking massive for the Rams. And as a Rams fan, it's amazing. Let's take a look at the updated Super Bowl odds now that the playoff brackets are set. Let's see. The favorites are the San Francisco 49ers at plus 220. Then you got the Baltimore Ravens at plus 310. Buffalo Bills plus 650. Dallas Cowboys plus 750. Kansas City Chiefs plus 1,000. Philadelphia Eagles plus 1,600. Same odds as the Miami Dolphins. Both of those, the Eagles and Dolphins, are both at plus 1,600. Detroit Lions plus 1,800. Cleveland Browns plus 3,500. Houston Texans plus 4,000. Los Angeles Rams plus 4,500. Tampa Bay Buccaneers plus 6,000. Green Bay Packers plus 9,000. And Pittsburgh Steelers plus 12,000. I think it's going to be a 49ers-Ravens Super Bowl. I think, you know, the colors are show that as well of the Super Bowl logo. They've been accurate in recent years. So, yeah, let's talk about the NFL playoff bracket now. In the AFC seedings, here we go. The Ravens are at 13-4. Buffalo Bills 11-6. So let's talk about them. The Ravens at 13-4. The Ravens may have lost a meaningless season finale, but they remain a loaded, balanced team that ranks fourth in the league in both total offense and total defense. Led by the likely NFL MVP and quarterback Lamar Jackson, the Ravens have to be considered the favorites to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. Next up, the Buffalo Bills at 11-6. It's definitely been an up-and-down season for the Bills, who entered Week 18 facing a potential scenario where they could miss the playoffs altogether, despite winning four straight following their bye week. Instead, the Bills are the AFC East champion for a fourth straight season after beating the Dolphins, and any team with Josh Allen under center and a top-five scoring defense is going to be a tough out, to say the least. Next up, the perennial Super Bowl contender Kansas City Chiefs, also at 11-6. The Chiefs won the AFC West for the eighth straight season, and the Kansas City defense has been a pleasant surprise this season, ranking second in the league entering Week 18. But the Kansas City offense has not been as explosive as in years past, and as a result, Patrick Mahomes could be looking at the first road playoff game of his career. Next up, the Houston Texans at 10-7. There isn't a more surprising team in the AFC playoffs than the Houston Texans, who went from tomato cans in 2022 to AFC South champions in 2023 under first-year head coach DeMeco Ryans and rookie quarterback C.J. Stroud. It's an absolutely remarkable turnaround. Next up, the 11-6 Cleveland Browns. Despite playing with four different quarterbacks and losing the star running back Nick Chubb early in the season, the Browns had their most successful season since rejoining the NFL in 1999. The engine for that success has been their absolutely elite defense. Next up, the 11-6 Miami Dolphins. For most of the season, the Dolphins have ranked at the top of the NFL in yards and points a game, and there's no question that Miami is loaded offensively when at full strength, but the team didn't have running back Raheem Mostert or wide receiver Jalen Waddle on Sunday night. The team's edge rushers have been ravaged by injuries, and Miami has one win this year over a team with a winning record, so I don't see them as Super Bowl contenders. And of course, the 10-7 Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh has endured its share of adversity in 2023, including turning to three different starting quarterbacks, but the Steelers have never had a losing season under Mike Tomlin, and that continues. That, I mean, it's crazy. NFC, of course, at the top, you got the 49ers. The 49ers are a loaded and balanced squad. We got Brock Purdy, running back Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, I mean, George Kittle. It's a loaded team and a good defense, of course. Next up, the aforementioned Dallas Cowboys, who are also 12-5. Sunday's win over the Commanders was huge for the Cowboys' chances of a deep playoff run. Simply put, Dallas is a completely different team at home than on the road. At AT&T Stadium, the Cowboys are a perfect 8-0 and average 37.4 points a game. However, on the road, they're 4-5 and average only 21.5 points a game. Next up, the 12-5 Detroit Lions. The last time the Lions won 12 games was all the way back in 1991. The last time the Lions won the NFC North was never. It's been so long since Detroit won the division that it was still called the NFC Central back in 1993. Dan Campbell has done an outstanding job in Motown, but Detroit's mediocre defense could be an issue in the postseason, and I think it will be. Next up, the four-seeded. The playoff format needs to be changed. The seeding needs to be changed. You have the 9-8 Tampa Bay Buccaneers as the four seed. That is absolutely ridiculous. It wasn't especially pretty. Nothing in the NFC South was in 2023. But by virtue of Tampa's shutout win over the Carolina Panthers in Week 18, the Baker Mayfield-led Buccaneers are in the postseason for the fourth straight season. The question is whether an inconsistent Buccaneers team can make any noise in the playoffs. I don't think they can. Next up, the aforementioned Philadelphia Eagles. Not that long ago, the Eagles were considered arguably the best team in the NFL, but after an ugly loss to the Giants in Week 18, the Eagles limp into the postseason having lost 5 of 6. That's very bad and very ugly. As if that's not bad enough, quarterback Jalen Hurts' hand and wide receiver A.J. Brown's knee both left Sunday's face plant with injuries. Next up, perhaps the exact opposite of the Eagles, the Los Angeles Rams, who finished the season at 10-7. I mean, I'm so proud of these guys. They started off the season at 3-6, and they finished 10-7. That is so impressive, especially considering how many rookies we've had. And I mean, look, I could make the case that the Rams should have finished 14-3. I mean, the games against the Ravens, Steelers, Bengals, those were all games that should have been wins and were choked away. But nonetheless, it's okay. Like the Houston Texans in the AFC, not much was expected from the Rams in 2023. I mean, even Rams fans were thinking, oh, the Rams should tank for Caleb Williams. I was like, guys, we won a Super Bowl 2 years ago. We still have Matthew Stafford, still have Cooper Kupp, still have the head coaching genius Sean McVay, still have the arguably the best defensive player of all time in Aaron Donald, and this rookie phenom wide receiver Puka Nacua. Speaking of rookie phenoms, Kyren Williams. I mean, come on. But yeah, thanks to a pair of massive surprises on offense and running back Kyren Williams and wide receiver Puka Nacua, and a solid season from veteran quarterback Matthew Stafford, the Rams already had a postseason spot locked up entering Week 18. And of course, the Green Bay Packers squeaked in at 9-8. It wasn't always pretty, but Jordan Love's first full season as the starting quarterback in Titletown ended with a trip to the postseason. That should be considered a success for them. Let me give my predictions now. Let's Browns and Texans. I would definitely go with the Texans on this one. I think it will be a close game. Dolphins and Chiefs. I'm going to go with the Dolphins. I just despise the Chiefs, and I'm going to go with the Dolphins. The Steelers and Bills, this is probably the easiest one. The Bills, I mean, all day. Packers and Cowboys. Mike McCarthy of the Cowboys facing his former team. I think this is just a huge mismatch, despite the fact that Mike McCarthy is an idiot. The Packers have no chance to win this game. Cowboys all the way. Rams and Lions, I'm going to go with the Rams. But I think it's going to be a nail-biter. I think it's going to be an offensive shootout. Jared Goff versus Matthew Stafford. Stafford's return to Detroit. I mean, the NFL script writers went crazy with this one. I'm going to go with the Rams. Eagles, Buccaneers. You know, a few weeks ago, I would have said Eagles without even thinking twice, but with how bad they've been, I don't even know. I'll probably go with the Buccaneers just because of how bad the Eagles have been. And let's talk about more football. Arthur Smith's time in Atlanta has come to a close. The Falcons fired their head coach after a disappointing 7-10 season that saw the team miss the postseason. The team also announced that GM Terry Fontenot will assist in the impending coaching search. The news comes just hours after a season-ending 48-17 blowout loss to the New Orleans Saints, which saw Smith confront Saints head coach Dennis Allen about a late touchdown after the game. Allen apologized to Smith and the Falcons during his post-game press conference, noting that the players made the call to try to score rather than take a knee. Smith told reporters that the Saints are allowed to, quote, do whatever they want, and that he is also allowed to tell Allen how I feel. It's hard to find many silver linings, if any, for the Falcons from the 2023 season, beyond the fact that the team has exciting young playmakers in running back Bijan Robinson and wide receiver Drake London and tight end Kyle Pitts for the future. It didn't help that second-year quarterback Desmond Ridder showed little to no progress in his sophomore season, getting benched multiple times throughout the season while throwing for just 2,836 yards, 12 touchdowns, and 12 interceptions. That's just the definition of mid. So the Falcons fire their coach. The Carolina Panthers also fired their GM, Scott Fitter. No surprise there. Here's an interesting story. Washington Commanders owner Josh Harris is thinking outside the box, as I mentioned earlier, as he and the organization embark on a full coaching search. Woj of ESPN, the NBA reporter, and Adam Schefter, the NFL reporter, jointly reported that the Commanders hired former Golden State Warriors GM Bob Myers and former Minnesota Vikings GM Rick Spielman to aid in targeting candidates to replace Ron Rivera, who was fired on Monday. Myers specifically, quote, will take a lead role in identifying and coordinating interviews with candidates for both the top football operations and head coaching jobs, with Spielman set to work closely with him. So very interesting stuff. Myers is a two-time NBA Executive of the Year who built a dynasty with the Golden State Warriors, one that captured four titles over an eight-year stretch. The 48-year-old had worked as a player agent for Wasserman Media Group before entering the front office ranks. Hiring an executive with no NFL experience to such a prominent role will naturally be met with this level of skepticism, but he did want to work outside the box, and he is certainly doing so. The Cleveland Browns did something a little similar when they hired Paul DePodesta, who worked for multiple MLB teams as their chief strategy officer in 2016. The Browns have made the playoffs twice since his arrival, but the Deshaun Watson trade might come to define DePodesta's tenure. With Myers, the Commanders are hiring a proven winner who possesses the skills that translate beyond basketball. So that's interesting. That's very interesting. It really is. I mean, I'm not sure what to really make of this. I mean, Bob Myers is a proven winner, a proven, top-notch executive, former player agent, like I just mentioned. Based on Woj's and Schefter's reporting, the Commanders are not empowering Myers to make every football-related decision either. He's just that will be led to the new head coach and head of football operations. Spielman's involvement also shouldn't be overlooked. A former GM for the Miami Dolphins and Minnesota Vikings, he helps to balance out Myers' inexperience in football and should prove helpful to identifying prospective candidates in the early stages of the search. So this is definitely very interesting. Let's see. The Commanders fired Ron Rivera officially. No surprise there. Draymond apparently considered retiring while he was suspended. I mean, that's ridiculous. He's like, oh, if I can't punch people in the face, I'm going to retire. That's the NBA equivalent of telling a girl that you're going to kill yourself if she breaks up with you. But, you know, speaking of breakups, the most lucrative partnership in golf history has come to an end. Tiger Woods announced that he and Nike will part ways after a 27-year partnership. That's 7 years longer than I've been alive. In a statement released Monday on social media, Tiger Woods has partnered with Nike his entire professional career, with their red polos present at all 15 of his major championships. Before Woods' arrival on the golf scene, Nike only had a footprint in golf apparel. Thanks in large part to Tiger's rise to superstardom, the company expanded its offerings into balls and clubs, with Woods serving as a Jordan-esque face of the expansion. Michael Jordan, that is. While Woods remained a loyal ambassador to the brand, Nike never became the true dominant force in golf that the way that they have in other sports. The company ended production of golf equipment in 2016, which coincided with a low period in Tiger Woods' career caused by injuries. Woods has won only 3 times on the PGA Tour over the last decade and has played in only 13 tournaments since the start of the 2019-20 season. Even as he remains by far the world's most recognizable golfer, Woods is nowhere close to competing among the elite, and his 2021 car crash has physically limited the 48-year-old. Nike may be getting out of golf altogether. Jason Day, one of the company's other prominent endorsers, recently announced that he was leaving Nike for Malibu Golf. Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler are among the names that still have deals to wear Nike apparel. Even if Woods is not as active on the PGA Tour as he once was, odds are he already has a lucrative new deal lined up for apparel from some other brand. I mean, he's such a big name. Now let's take a look at the latest college basketball top 25 AP poll, going from 25 to 1. Texas, FAU, Gonzaga, Creighton, Clemson, Utah State, San Diego State, BYU, Colorado State, Auburn, Wisconsin, Baylor, Memphis, Duke, Marquette, Illinois, Oklahoma, Arizona, North Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, UConn, Kansas, Houston, and Purdue. Purdue never trailed and led by as many as 22 points in its 67-53 win over Maryland. It looked like a similarly dominant result was unfolding against number 9 Illinois, which is still without leading scorer Terrence Shannon Jr. after he was charged with rape and suspended. Jesus Christ. The Boilermakers were up 15 at halftime and maintained an 18-point advantage with 10 minutes left. The Fighting Illinois clawed back, though, and got to within 3 late thanks to a long-range jumper by Coleman Hawkins. 2 free throws from Braden Smith were enough to ice the game. For Purdue, it was definitely a disaster averted. A little further down the polls, Arizona responded to a shocking upset at the hands of Stanford by hammering Colorado by 47 points. The Wildcats then cruised past Utah 92-73. That pair of wins helped them to move up from number 10 to 8th, and Marquette's 3-point loss to Seton Hall helped in that respect as well. Tennessee reeled off its 7th straight win as well to solidify their top 5 standing. Jonas Idu had 24 points and 10 boards as the Vols made easy work of number 22 Ole Miss. Nobody in the top 25 had a worse week than Clemson, though. The Tigers had an opportunity to lay down a marker in what's shaping up to be a wide-open ACC title race. Instead, they lost 95-82 on the road at Miami and failed to defend their home court against number 8 North Carolina. Oof. Yeah, so definitely a bad week for Clemson. Slipping to 11-3 overall and 1-2 in ACC sent the Tigers to number 21 in the new poll. Looking to the week ahead, a road trip to Waco, Texas to play Baylor on Tuesday is either the best or worst thing for BYU coming off a loss to unranked Cincinnati. North Carolina State, which has 3-0 to open ACC play, hosts North Carolina on Wednesday for the newest entry to the in-state rivalry. On Thursday, Michigan State can continue to build positive momentum after a shaky start to the year against Illinois. The most anticipated matchup won't arrive until Saturday when Kansas hosts Oklahoma at Allen Fieldhouse. Depending on what happens elsewhere in the country, a comprehensive win for the Jayhawks might be enough to impress voters enough to install them back at the number 2 spot in the poll. We got more football to talk about. New York Giants defensive coordinator Wink Martindale is resigning from his role with the team, according to Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News. He will certainly be in high demand, assuming that he doesn't retire. That news comes just hours after coach Brian Daboll said that he believed that Martindale and offensive coordinator Mike Kafka will be back in 2024. That's obviously not the case. He said, quote, "My expectation is that Wink and Kafka will both be back. There are still conversations to be had," Daboll said per Jordan Rannan of ESPN. "We've only been here for a short time. Daboll continued by saying that having some continuity would be beneficial for the team next season, and the commitment shown from the two to the franchise is something he values, saying, quote, "It's my expectation that they're going to come back. I think they're good coaches, so it would be good to have some continuity and be back. I know Wink talks about this as a destination place and things like that. It's good. I appreciate how hard they work, the commitment to the team, so that is my plan." However, Martindale's future with the team appeared to be in doubt when Rannan and the Athletic reported on Monday that he may not return next season. The Giants went 6-11 after a strong 9-7-1 season in 2022. That's how the franchise reached the postseason for the first time since 2016. This year that is over for them now is horrible, as they ranked 29th in the NFL, while the offense ranked 29th in the NFL, while the defense ranked not much better at 27th. The 2024 College Football Hall of Fame class has been announced, and it is highlighted by former Marshall receiver Randy Moss, former Pittsburgh wideout Larry Fitzgerald, and former Utah quarterback Alex Smith, as well as former North Carolina defensive end Julius Peppers. Quote, "We are extremely proud to announce the 2024 College Football Hall of Fame class," former Ole Miss quarterback and NFF chairman Archie Manning said in a statement. "Each of these men has established himself among the absolute best to have ever played or coached the game, and we look forward to immortalizing their incredible accomplishments." Moss, who is also an NFL Hall of Fame player, played only one season of Division 1A at Marshall, but he sure made it count, registering 90 catches for 1,647 yards and 25 touchdowns in 1997. He was the Fred Biliknoff Award winner as the nation's top wideout. It was a consensus All-America selection and finished fourth in the Heisman voting that year behind a pair of fellow NFL Hall of Famers, Michigan's Charles Woodson and Tennessee's Peyton Manning, along with Washington State quarterback Ryan Leaf, who was an NFL bust. The Minnesota Vikings went on to select him with the number 21 pick in the 1998 NFL Draft. Fitzgerald, also a future All-NFL Hall of Famer, registered 161 catches, 2,677 yards, and a whopping 34 touchdowns in only two seasons at Pittsburgh, winning the same award as Randy Moss and the Walter Camp Player of the Year award in 2003. He was a consensus All-America selection and the Big East Offensive Player of the Year that season after catching 22 touchdown passes and accumulating almost 1,700 receiving yards. He went on to play 17 seasons with the Arizona Cardinals in the NFL after being the number 3 overall selection in the 2004 draft. Smith, meanwhile, spent 3 seasons at Utah, registering 5,203 yards, 47 touchdowns, and only 8 interceptions. He was the MWC Offensive Player of the Year in his junior year and finished 4th in the Heisman voting behind USC's Matt Leinart and the Oklahoma pair of Adrian Peterson and Jason White. He paired with head coach Urban Meyer to lead the Utes to a perfect season. He went on to be the top overall pick by the 49ers in the 2005 draft, spending 16 years in the NFL with the Niners, Kansas City Chiefs, and Washington Commanders. Peppers was a consensus All-America selection in 2001, winning the Chuck Bednarik Award and Vince Lombardi Award that season. In his 3 seasons at North Carolina, 1999 to 2001, he posted 30.5 sacks and 53 tackles for a loss. He was the number 2 overall pick in the 2002 NFL draft by the Carolina Panthers and spent 17 seasons in the league with Carolina, the Chicago Bears, and Green Bay Packers. Like Fitzgerald, he will certainly be in the Hall of Fame one day. And lastly, more NFL. The Jacksonville Jaguars have reportedly fired defensive coordinator Mike Caldwell, according to Bleacher Report's Jordan Schultz. Caldwell was initially hired by the Jaguars in February 2022 after previously serving as the inside linebackers coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. His firing comes on the heels of Jacksonville's disappointing 28-20 loss to the Tennessee Titans on Sunday, eliminating them from postseason contention after making the playoffs last year. Mostly an NFL-heavy podcast episode today. Thank you guys so much for listening. I love you guys. I love doing this shit. And I'll see you guys on number 429 soon. The national championship game is tonight. Michigan versus Michigan versus Washington. I got Michigan. And I'll see you guys on the next one. I'm out. Peace. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the one, the only Sean Sports Stop Podcast. We're your main man, the GOAT himself. That's me, by the way. Reports the biggest news in sports, and of course, I'll give you my scintillating and captivating opinion on everything going on. I've been good recently as far as, consistently doing my podcast and doing what I love. But I have not done an episode since December the 22nd, so that's a little bit too long. It is January 8th today, Monday, January 8th, so a couple of weeks. Obviously, haven't done one since Christmas, New Year's, so happy holidays to all you guys listening. And let's get right into it, starting off with some MLB. 5-time MLB All-Star Michael Brantley's career has come to an end after 15 seasons. He told John Morosi of MLB Network of his decision to walk away after playing for the Cleveland Guardians and Houston Astros. He said, quote, It's time for me to be home 24/7, watch my kids grow up, and not miss important milestones, he said. Brantley began his professional career with the Milwaukee Brewers. He was a 7th-round draft pick out of Fort Pierce Central High School in 2005. The Brewers traded Brantley to Cleveland in October 2008 as part of a unique agreement between the two teams. CC Sabathia was traded to Milwaukee during the 2008 season for a package of players that also included Matt Laporta, Zach Jackson, and Rob Bryson. Per a stipulation in the deal, Cleveland was given the right to select the players to be named later in the trade if the Brewers made the postseason. If Milwaukee failed to make the playoffs, it would have been allowed to choose the player to be named in the deal. So that is definitely a unique set of circumstances and a unique stipulation in the trade for sure. Sabathia led the Brewers to the postseason, allowing Cleveland to add Brantley. He made his MLB debut in 2009 and spent 10 seasons with Cleveland. When he became a free agent following the 2018 season, Brantley signed with the Astros. He played the final 5 years of his big league career in Houston. He hit .298, .355, .439 with 129 homers, 720 RBIs, and 125 stolen bases in 1,445 career games. He was named to the American League All-Star team 5 times, including 4 times in 5 seasons from 2017 through 2021. The 2014 season saw Brantley finish 3rd in American League MVP voting when he hit for a .327 batting average, .385 on-base percentage, .506 slugging, with 20 homers, 97 RBIs, and 23 stolen bases. He won a World Series with the Astros in 2022, though a shoulder injury prevented him from playing in the postseason. So definitely a respectable and fairly storied career for Michael Brantley. Let's switch gears to the NBA now. The trade deadline is fast approaching. The Toronto Raptors already traded OG Anunoby to the New York Knicks, and Pascal Siakam appears to be the next in line to be moved this winter. Siakam is expected to be dealt by the February 8th trade deadline, according to Tim Bontemps of ESPN. Jake Fisher of Yahoo Sports reported that, quote, chatter among NBA executives surrounding Siakam's potential landing spots has now centered on the Detroit Pistons, Indiana Pacers, and Sacramento Kings. He added, quote, other teams mentioned, such as Dallas and Philadelphia, don't appear as viable destinations at this juncture, although Toronto officials have suggested to inquiring front offices as many as 10 teams hold legitimate interest in Siakam, and I wouldn't rule that possibility out at all. Siakam has been one of the hottest names on the trade market this winter as the Raptors enter a likely rebuild. However, Woj of ESPN reported Saturday that there has been, quote, no traction in trade talks involving the veteran following the Anunoby trade. Siakam is set to become a free agent after this season. However, he'll only be eligible to sign a 2-year contract extension if he's traded at the trade deadline. NBA insider Mark Stein reported Monday that if traded, Siakam, quote, would prefer again to proceed to unrestricted free agency, meaning that any team that trades for him now must be daring enough to roll those dice. You know, he might leave just like Kawhi left after 1 year in Toronto, after the Spurs traded him there, signed with the Clippers. This happens in every sport. It's not new at all. Siakam has spent his entire 8-year career in Toronto, helping the franchise capture the 2018 NBA championship. He also earned the 2018-19 Most Improved Player Award, 2 All-Star selections, and 2 All-NBA selections. Despite Toronto's struggles this season, the 29-year-old is still having a very solid season. Although his numbers are down across the board, he's averaging 22.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, and 5 assists in 34 games, while shooting 52% from the floor, but only 28.8% from 3, so he's not shooting well from 3. While Siakam's numbers are down by his standards, he would still be a great addition for any contending team this year, and it will be very interesting to see where he ends up. I mean, presumably he will be traded, as it has been reported. Speaking of trades, let's talk about some more baseball. The San Francisco Giants acquired former Cy Young Award winner Robbie Ray from the Seattle Mariners in exchange for outfielder Mitch Haniger, pitcher Anthony DeSclafani, and cash. Jeff Passan of ESPN was the first to report the deal. In a separate trade, the Mariners sent infielder Jose Caballero to the Tampa Bay Rays in exchange for outfielder Luke Raley. That's Dodgers legend Luke Raley for you. Robbie Ray underwent Tommy John surgery in May and is expected to miss the beginning of the 2024 season. He has 3 years and $73 million remaining on his contract, which contains a player opt-out option after 2024. So presumably, the Giants found that opt-out somewhat attractive. Haniger will return to Seattle after batting .263 over 5 seasons with the Mariners between 2017 and 2022. Robbie Ray's 5-year contract, which he signed with the Mariners following his 2021 Cy Young campaign with the Toronto Blue Jays, including a full no-trade clause through the first 2 years and offered an assignment bonus for a trade afterward, according to Joel Sherman of the New York Post. Robbie Ray sustained an injury to his throwing arm in the single start that he made for the Mariners in 2023. During the season prior, he went 12-12 in 32 starts with a 3.71 ERA and 1.9 whip. The Giants will hope that Robbie Ray can get back to his Cy Young form when he makes his return, which is expected to be after the All-Star break, according to the aforementioned Jeff Passan. Meanwhile, the Mariners will take a chance on Disclafani, who after a solid 2021 season went through two inconsistent and injury-plagued seasons with the Giants. He showed promise early in 2023, holding a 2.7 ERA and 27-3 strikeout-to-walk ratio through his first 30 innings and 5 starts before struggling later on in the season. Similarly, the Mariners will hope for a bounce-back season from Haniger, who they are obviously very familiar with, who also struggled with injury in his first year away from Seattle as he slashed a career low with a .209 batting average, .266 on-base percentage, and .365 slugging, very, very bad numbers, through 61 games with the Giants. Both could be in Seattle for only one season. Disclafani has $12 million and 1 year remaining on his deal, while Haniger has 2 years and $32.5 million remaining, but also an opt-out option after 2024. Raley is coming off a career-best season for the Braves after hitting for a .249 average with 19 homers in 406 plate appearances. In exchange, Caballero will head to the Rays after hitting only .221, but he stole a career-high 26 bases in his rookie season for the Mariners. He could slot in at shortstop in Tampa Bay, of course, replacing the disgraced Wander Franco. Friday's trades continue what has so far been an offseason full of change for the Mariners, who have dealt players such as Jared Kelenic, Eugenio Suarez, and Marco Gonzalez, while adding designated hitter Midge Garver in free agency as well. The Seattle front office will hope that those changes are enough to get the Mariners back into the playoffs for the second time in 22 seasons. Let's talk about some hockey, shall we? We don't talk about hockey often, but how about those fucking Americans, baby? The United States is golden. The Americans defeated Sweden 6-2 on Friday in the 2024 World Junior Hockey Championship gold medal game at the Scandinavium in Sweden to win their first gold medal since 2021 and sixth overall. It was a dominant performance for the United States, as the score indicates, 6-2, which they had never lost a game at this year's tournament en route to winning the gold. USA's Gabe Perreault opened the scoring with about 3 minutes remaining in the first period to give the Americans a 1-0 lead entering the locker room. The Swedes struck some fear into the Americans early in the second period as Otto Stenberg beat Trey Augustine on a tip shot to tie the game at 1-1. However, the United States ended up taking a 3-2 lead into the third period thanks to Isaac Howard, who notched 2 goals in the second. Jonathan Lekmiarki notched the Swedes' only other goal when he scored late in the second period. The Americans took control of the game in the third period as Ziv Bjuum and Ryan Leonard scored to put the United States up 5-2 before captain Rutger McGroarty scored an empty netter to cap off the night. What a night it was for the Americans. This marks the second time that the United States has defeated Sweden in the gold medal game. The Americans defeated the Swedes in 2013 with a roster that included NHLers Jacob Trouba, Johnny Gaudreau, John Gibson, and Seth Jones. While the Americans earned their 6th gold medal, Sweden has not won the tournament in more than a decade, with the country's last gold medal coming in 2021. The team is now 2-12 in championship games at the World Juniors, so definitely not a good record for them. Let's transition to some boxing now. Anthony Joshua and Francis Ngannou, Le Predateur, are set to face off in a boxing match. Combat Sports insider Ariel Helwani first reported the fight. Eddie Hearn later confirmed the fight and that there will be a press conference in London on January the 15th. Joshua had a bout scheduled for March, although his adversary wasn't known at the time. It was supposed to be Deontay Wilder, and presumably Anthony Joshua was going to beat Otto Wallin, with Deontay Wilder prevailing over Joseph Parker. However, us boxing fans can't have anything easy. Deontay Wilder got absolutely schooled by Joseph Parker, so there is no Joshua fight. About 6 years ago, Deontay Wilder versus Anthony Joshua was the biggest fight in boxing, without a doubt, with both of them being undefeated heavyweights. Since then, they have both lost multiple times, Wilder losing to Fury twice, arguably three times, and now just losing to Joseph Parker, with Anthony Joshua getting stopped shockingly by Andy Ruiz Jr. in 2019, and then losing back-to-back fights against the undisputed cruiserweight world champion Alexander Usyk of Ukraine. But anyway, going back to this fight, Ngannou signed with the Professional Fighters League, the PFL, in May 2023, with his contract allowing him to participate in professional boxing matches. The former UFC heavyweight champion faced off against WBC heavyweight champion Tyson Fury in his first ever professional bout as a boxer on October 28th. Ngannou shocked the world by taking Fury the distance, narrowly losing via split decision in the end. Many were still extremely impressed with his performance against the champion, as he knocked down Fury in the third round with a left hook. He wasn't showing off his signature powerful punches throughout the entire fight, relying on a measured approach while going at Fury when he least expected him to do so. He'll take on another notable world-level world champion heavyweight as Anthony Joshua enters the fight with a record of 27-3 with 24 knockouts. In his last fight, Joshua defeated Otto Wallin by knockout in the fifth round on December 23rd. Speculation of a fight between the two has been rampant since Ngannou's matchup against Fury. Eddie Hearn, Joshua's co-promoter, discussed the possibility of the two facing off in an appearance on the MMA Hour on December 11th, saying, quote, I reached out to Francis Ngannou's team and I said, just to let you know, we're up for discussing the Francis Ngannou versus AJ fight. I never heard back from them, but now that fight is set. Let's switch gears back to the NBA. Already playing without Draymond Green due to an indefinite suspension, the Golden State Warriors won't have Chris Paul for the time being due to a fractured hand suffered in Friday's win over the Detroit Pistons. The Warriors announced that CP3 will undergo surgery next week with the expectation that he will return at some point this season. Quote, that's tough, head coach Steve Kerr said. I feel so bad for Chris. I know he's had a couple of hand surgeries before. I believe maybe on the other hand, I saw him holding it and instantly was worried. Just got the word after walking off the floor, so I feel terrible for Chris, and obviously guys will step up and be ready to play. We've got to hold down the fort without him. Steph Curry echoed Kerr's sentiments, telling reporters during his post-game press conference that he feels bad for CP3 and the Warriors need to find ways to make adjustments without two of their key playmakers. Paul suffered the injury midway through the third quarter when his hand made contact with Pistons guard Jaden Ivey as he was going for a rebound. He remained in the game for about 30 more seconds but was flexing his hand and went to the locker room for examination after being replaced by Andrew Wiggins. The Warriors ruled him out for the rest of the game soon after that. Hand and wrist injuries have been a problem for Paul throughout his career. He most recently had offseason wrist surgery following the Phoenix Suns' run to the NBA Finals during the 2020-21 campaign. A timetable for Paul's return to the court will likely be determined after he has the surgery. His injury comes at a time with Draymond Green appearing to be getting closer to being reinstated from his suspension. Woj of ESPN reported on Thursday that Green is expected to return to Golden State's facilities, quote, in the coming days to begin ramping up for a return to play. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has yet to make an official announcement about Draymond's status, but Woj noted that the four-time All-Star is believed to have satisfied the league's requirements to be reinstated once the Warriors determine that he's ready to play in games. Paul leads the Warriors in assists per game at 7.3 in 31 appearances this season. He missed two games earlier this season due to a leg nerve contusion. Golden State held on for a 113-109 victory over the Pistons on Friday night to improve its record to 17-18. They moved ahead of the Lakers, who are 17-19 for the number 10 seed in the Western Conference. Let's see. Let's talk about some football now. Coming off back-to-back playoff losses defined by some baffling coaching decisions, Dallas Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy is under as much pressure as anyone going into this postseason. Per Adam Schefter of ESPN, there is a belief around the NFL that McCarthy's future will be tied to how the Cowboys' final game goes. Quote, if the Cowboys play well in the postseason, McCarthy would have an excellent chance to keep his job. But if they struggle and end the season with an embarrassing loss, as has happened in each of the past 2 years, then some say that change could come to Dallas. If the Cowboys have another ugly loss in the playoffs, it won't be a surprise if Jerry Jones decides to move on from McCarthy. The last two seasons have ended in rough fashion for the Cowboys. They lost in the 2021 NFC wildcard game to the San Francisco 49ers when time ran out after Dak Prescott scrambled for 17 yards. In a rematch with the 49ers in last year's NFC divisional round, McCarthy's final play call with Ezekiel Elliott snapping the ball as the only offensive lineman was roundly mocked. There were reasons beyond McCarthy that the Cowboys lost both games, obviously. Dak Prescott struggled in the playoffs loss last year, throwing two interceptions that led to 6 points for the Niners in a game that ended with a 19-12 final score. But the combination of a questionable play calling and clock management, plus being in his fourth season with the Cowboys, you know, a Cowboys team that has been regarded as one of the most talented in the NFL over the past 3 years, is going to put a bright, definitely going to put a bright spotlight on Mike McCarthy, especially considering the fact that it's the Dallas Cowboys and they are America's team, so to speak, in quotes. McCarthy has led the Cowboys to 35 wins since the start of the 2021 season. That's tied with the 49ers for the second most in the NFL, trailing only the Kansas City Chiefs, who have had 36 in that time. The Cowboys have not advanced beyond the divisional round since they last won the Super Bowl in 1995. They are set up to win the NFC East for the second time in 3 years. McCarthy is on the hot seat. Speaking of hot seats, having already made one significant decision about Russell Wilson's future with the Denver Broncos, Sean Payton is going to be in charge of another key figure in the team's front office. Per Adam Schefter of ESPN, Payton is expected to have, quote, final say on whether or not George Payton stays on as GM after this season. Payton announced on December 27th that Wilson was being benched for the